downward a human serviette from Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada.
Cool. Of what?
From CITR, UBC Radio, and I also do freelance interviews for different publications like Razor Cake Fanzine and Rocktober Fanzine and Charge Magazine in Canada, and I also like videotaping interviews when I do them in person, and I put them on my website or give them to various cable access sort of TV stations, and the word sort of is because there aren't too many left
on
the cable access variety, and also I play in a rock and roll band, The Evaporators, and also play in a mysterious band called The Goblins.
Not to be confused with The Goblin or the other The Goblins.
Interestingly enough, there's a goblin in every town.
Okay.
There's a legendary Italian band called Goblin. There's The Goblins from Chicago. Interestingly about that, too, is that Jake from The Goblins in Chicago runs Rocktober Fanzine, and that's how basically I met him, because he came to a gig in Chicago to see a band, and it turned out this band called The Goblins were opening, and he was in a band called The Goblins, and so he ended up befriending us, and next thing you know, we are actually doing an 8-track release with Jake from The Goblins. Wow, it's all coming together, and then he invites me to write for Rocktober Fanzine. So he's The Goblins from Chicago. We are The Goblins from Vancouver, and there's also Goblin Cock and another band called Goblins. I just encourage, like, the more goblins, the better. More confusion, the better.
We actually have a quite literal goblin in Fort Worth. He's kind of rolls
around. Quite literal goblin?
No, there's just a goblin, an actual goblin.
Oh, just goblin.
No, a goblin, like a little monster that rolls around. It's terrifying.
It's funny because I used that as the handle for when some of the evaporators help out with the goblins. One of the goblins is called a goblin. Like, I am the goblin.
Oh.
I play keyboards. The drummer, Scott, is the goblin. And when John, the bass player of the evaporators, helps out in the goblins, he's a goblin.
Oh, beautiful. So you've been interviewing people for how long?
The first interview I did was in high school on September the 26th, 1985, and it was with a guy called Art Bergman, who played in a band at that time called Poisoned. Not Poison, Poisoned. Although Vancouver has had a great history of recording heavy metal, sort of hair metal bands like Bon Jovi record Slippery When Wet in Vancouver, and recorded Motley Crue and Def Leppard as well. But Art Bergman was in the band Poisoned at the time, playing our high school, but previously he'd been in a punk band from Vancouver called the Young Canadians, who, believe it or not, had thanked our high school, Hillside Secondary in West Vancouver, in the liner notes to their 12-inch record, This Is Your Life. So when his band played our high school, and I got his band to play our high school, I negotiated the price of his band playing from $1,400 to $1,398. I was president of the student council, so I was really good at negotiations there. I thought, they're playing our high school, I got to do an interview, so that's captured on video. I have not uploaded that yet on YouTube, but hopefully someday I will.
That's awesome.
And the Young Canadians were an amazing band. They've got a couple compilations that are out there that you can check out, but they're famous for the song, Let's Go to Fucking Hawaii, Get Drunk in the Sun, and it became a real anthem. Frat people liked it because they thought it was like, let's go fucking Hawaii, but really he was saying, let's go to fucking Hawaii.
That's also when tourism in Hawaii was like raised a whole lot, actually, in like that 1985 era. Am I right?
I'm probably thinking before then, when he wrote that song, it was probably 78, 79.
Okay.
Young Canadians broke up. But, however, you are totally on there, Rick. You are totally on top of it, because I remember there were a lot of kids that wore T-shirts that said Hawaii 77. Like, Hawaii 1977, I think, was a real sort of Hawaii-centric year. Everybody was into Hawaii. Back then, that's probably when he wrote it, too, so that's probably what made him think of it. Like, Hawaii 77. Like, you know, Sean Penn would be wearing, like, Hawaii 77 shirt in Fast Times or something like that.
Beautiful. Beautiful. How long have you been doing things for CITR?
I got my show on CITR UBC Radio in October of 1987, but I joined CITR Radio in September of 1986. So it took me about a year to get the courage to do a radio show. I was just happy doing announcements. They had stuff, we called them carts. I guess now you kind of call them, they're played off the computer and stuff, but they were announcements. Like, I remember doing one for Spike Lee's movie, She's Gotta Have It! And we did public service announcements and ads for like giving blood and that sort of stuff. So I was like in charge of those, and that was just awesome because you could like make these announcements and then they would be played at all times during the day and people would recognize you just from the announcements. So that's what I did for 1 year, and then eventually I decided, well, I know how to use the equipment, maybe I could do a radio show. And so originally they were going to give me just 15 minutes, but then they said, well, we've got to have a minimum half an hour. So it was 2:30 to 3 o'clock. Now it is 3:30 to 5, however, I still only usually have a half-hour interview, so I just fill the other stuff up with music or spoken word or something like that.
That's fun stuff. And who was the first man you interviewed? Was that DOA? Am I wrong?
Wow. Exactly. You are right. That is the first band I ever interviewed, Rick. I did not think that I was going to do interviews on CITR. I just thought that I'd be just playing music. But it became so crazy after my first show, like Records Everywhere, I thought I got to kill the time somehow. It was only half an hour. So DOA were in the studio, and I asked if I could do an interview with them. And they said yes, and then they came out. And it was Dave Gregg of DOA, the bass player of DOA. And you can actually hear that interview at Nardwar.com. If people are interested in hearing any of the stuff that I'm talking about, you can hear that interview with DOA, Nardwar.com, just go down to DOA. What's neat about that show is Randy Iwata, who now runs Mint Records in Vancouver, he said that was my best show, and that's when I peaked. And I should have quit right after then, because it was really great because Dave Gregg came into CITR, and we had him playing a bass, and I think he did like a live Madonna song on the air, and it sounded amazing, and Randy from Mint just thought that was just the best thing ever, and it's been downhill ever since then. So my first show was my best show. That's the great thing about CITR radios. There's always people offering encouragement, and I think that's basically what I sort of think I stand for, is like, if this idiot can play in a band, if this idiot can do a radio show, anybody can do a radio show. And that's what I really love about CITR, is there's always people offering comments or listeners phoning in. Just a couple weeks ago, somebody phoned and said, when did you get a show on CITR? You suck. I didn't say to the guy 22 years ago because I was embarrassed, but I love it. Like, it keeps you on your toes. Therefore, when you get involved with some of the traditional media, I've been in some other commercial radio stations as a guest, not doing a show, but as a guest. Like, I'm scared, I'm shaking because, you know, there might be somebody phoning in to criticize me. I think people on commercial radio, they're too complacent. They're not thinking about people criticizing, you know, because they cut them off. But we at non-commercial campus radio, we just don't cut anybody off. So it always keeps you on your toes, and there's always somebody trying to pull a joke on me at CITR. Like, I remember I said my show ended at 4 p.m. It actually ended at 3, sorry, before it did, because I moved it because of my classes at the university. But my show started at 2:30. And it would end at 3, but sometimes I would go a bit longer if I didn't have a class or I wanted to skip a class. But the guy whose show started at 4 started getting mad, and he was the engineer for CITR Radio. So what he did was, when I reached 4 o'clock, he would just like, okay, no problem, we'll just start broadcasting from the other studio, and he wouldn't tell me. So I would like continue on for like 20 or 25 minutes and realize I wasn't even on the air because he was broadcasting from the other room. He would just like cut me off the air. I loved that sort of trickery that happened. Another time I remember doing my show, and he changed the monitors, the engineer guy. He changed the monitors, because usually, you know, you listen to yourself, so you're able to hear your own voice through the monitors and the headphones and all that. I guess it just helps you to figure out what's going on. What's important, so you can hear the music. Suddenly, they changed it to another radio station. So I'm doing an interview, and like, I'm hearing all this stuff coming through, and I couldn't figure out what the hell was going on. That was so great about CITR. It was completely cutting edge, and still is cutting edge, because they have all the crazy stuff that happened. Another time, I walked into the DJ booth, and it was a guy doing the noise show. My friend Adam, who now lives in Colorado, he was actually part of one of the first rap bands featuring a female MC in Vancouver, Terror T and the Beat Assassinator. You can check her out, T-E-R-R-O-R-T, Terror T and the Beat Assassinator. And they made like a couple videos. You can see those on YouTube as well. But he was doing a noise show at the time, and I walked into the studio, and he was lying on the control desk off the studio on the giant board there on his back, and there was a microphone up to his chest, and I was like, what the hell's going on? Nothing's going over the air. He's like, shut up. I'm broadcasting my heartbeat. And I was like, oh my God. When will this end? When will I stop learning? And I still haven't stopped learning.
It's beautiful.
That's my next story, pretty much.
I love it. It's rambling and rambling. It's great. Okay, well, do you interview people, right, obviously. And do you ever get nervous while doing this? Or something like you've ever been like terrified of when you interview them? Like, right now, I'm terrified.
Well, I'm nervous right now, Rick.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. I'm nervous every time when I speak, when I interview, when I go to a store to buy milk, I'm nervous. I'm just a constantly nervous person. I think sometimes that helps, and sometimes it doesn't help. I guess it doesn't help when you're like in front of a cop and you've done nothing wrong and you just start to sweat and they think you've done something wrong. But where it does help is like when you're thinking about an interview or you're preparing for a gig or something like that. You think, oh, we've got to have songs to play in the band. Well, that's obvious, so write songs down. I've got to have questions to ask. So I think it kind of drives me in that way. I do drink chamomile tea to bring me down, though, to make me relax.
Yeah, well, you seem very chill in most of your interviews. I'm actually, like, when people are like, when Sonic Youth is, like, beating up on you, I'm like, wow, he's taking it very nicely. Like, that blew my mind.
Well, as long as the tape is recording the interview, I'm happy. As long as it's being recorded. You know, the tape is your friend. Like, thankfully, my friend Scott, who's the Evaporator's drummer, and also in Z Goblins, he was recording that, doing a great job of recording it, too, so we're able to play it back to you. Other times, tapes have been destroyed. Like, when I interviewed heavy metal band Skid Row, the tape was destroyed. When I interviewed heavy metal band Quiet Riot, the tape was destroyed. When I interviewed Tom Green, he ordered the tape destroyed as well. All three of those people, all at intervals of 5 years. So there's been quite a few things that you haven't seen that have gone horribly wrong. And I don't mean horribly wrong like being arrested and stuff like that. I just mean like, you don't see how it turns out.
Yeah. So did Quiet Riot actually like physically destroy your things or just had it destroyed?
Yes, they physically destroyed it.
Wow.
The interview ended, and then afterwards they surrounded me in the club and said, we're calling the cops. And I'm like, why are you calling the cops? Because you're trespassing. I'm like, why am I trespassing? Because you haven't handed over the tape. And I'm like, what tape? The tape for the interview. Hand it over right now. And so I said, no, I don't hand over the tape. So they called the cops, and they called them a description of me. They said, there's a guy here dressed head to toe in plaid, and he's got his buddy with him. My buddy, Mr. Plow, there, was filming, and he was wearing like a Jason hockey mask, you know, like the Quiet Riot hockey mask. So we've got a guy here dressed head to toe in tartan, and a guy with a Jason hockey mask here at Graceland Club in Vancouver coming to arrest them for trespassing. And I'm like, oh, God, I don't want to be involved with the cops. So I said, okay, I handed over the tape. And then they chased us down the street, the Quiet Riot heavy metal guys, and then the cops showed up afterwards looking for us, but we were gone at that point. But yes, they actually wanted the tape back because they thought I was embarrassing them. I was just joking with the guy.
Wow.
Kevin Dubrow, and rest in peace because he's dead now.
Quiet Riot, wasn't that the band the Misfits chased down the street at one point?
That was Def Leppard.
No, are you sure it was Def Leppard?
Yes, I am sure it was Def Leppard because...
I think it was actually, because it was a band that has Tommy Lee in it.
If you go to my interview with Glenn Danzig, and it's at nardwar.com, you should be able to find that.
Okay, so you've actually talked directly to the source. I remember reading that they chased down I think Black Flag and the Misfits chased down Motley. Oh, it was Motley Crue, not Quiet Riot. I am very confused. Sorry.
I thought it was Def Leppard, too.
Yeah.
Well, maybe it was another incident with Def Leppard.
Yeah, they probably chased down a lot of metal bands. I hope.
Yeah, actually, some of that stuff did happen quite a bit because the metal bands were out there trying to figure out what was going on with all this punk thing happening. I know legendary punk band DOA, they had, like, David Lee Roth at one of their gigs, and they put him in, like, a headlock. I think he just came out there and said something to the effect of, like, you guys are doing the same stuff as us, it's just different clothes or something. Like, no way, dude, put him in a headlock. I think it was just a joking thing, but that did happen quite a bit.
Oh, yikes. And now back to your tape being destroyed and people just being basically very rude to you. Has this happened recently? Because I've noticed, like I watched your Welcome to the Castle DVD, all the older interviews and stuff, and those guys
thank you very much.
Yeah, everyone's a dick to you. Like, Sonic Youth just
let
me off.
Where'd you get that one?
I actually found it at a used CD store. Here.
Oh, what a score.
Yeah, and there's also two copies of the Evaporator CD there, too.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
I'm glad it got out there, because the Welcome to My Castle one was not distributed by Jello Biafra's Alternative Tentacles record label. But that's kind of an example of everything. Jello is on there.
Yeah, no, that's what I'm
saying. He's drawing with a black marker on
your
my
face.
And then years later, we're on his record label.
Oh, yeah, wow.
So I think if you just stay in the game long enough, sometimes you can work on these people. I guess I've had the luxury that it only took me about 15 years to win over Jello Biafra.
Yeah, a lot of people looks like everyone that I've seen you interview, like complete dicks to you in your heyday. Not in your heyday, but you know, back in the day. And then now, like, everyone's very, like, Jello Biafra is like, what interview with, when you're interviewing the Jello Biafra and the Melvins, he's not doing nothing to you, he's looking at you. I mean, he just got old and Sonic Youth is being respectful to you. Have they grown to love you and respect you?
Well, I actually tried to interview Sonic Youth when they played the Virgin Music Festival here in Vancouver a couple weeks ago, but they blew the interview off, and I said, okay, well, what about doing a phoner the next week, a phone interview? They said, okay, it might be possible, and then they blew that off as well. So I'm still having trouble with them. But that's the great thing. I don't think they've changed. They're still the same people, and I guess I wouldn't want them to change. Chris Novoselic, I interviewed him on the phone, I guess a couple months ago, and he was exactly the same way he was years ago. I don't know why I expected
people
to change, but they don't. Sorry?
Did he rub pizza on the phone?
No, he didn't rub pizza, but he suddenly, you know, had to go or that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
Like, that sort of craziness, which is something you should exactly expect what's going on. Like, you have to kind of understand, I guess, what the situation is, so I'm glad that people haven't changed. Plus, remember, those video interviews, like, you know, Welcome to My Castle DVD, and there's also another DVD, the Nardwuar Human Survey, DVD, those were just a little sampling. When you do your radio show every week, like I have for 22 years, there's going to be some interviews that are crazy. You've just seen, like, a handful of them, right, that are maybe crazy or a bit more rude, but generally, it's pretty much just boring. That's why people are still phoning in to complain. Not to complain because of swearing, not to complain because it's too rowdy, but to complain because it's boring.
I don't think it's boring at all. I wouldn't say it's boring.
But do you know what I mean, though? Like, those are just the ones that have...
Actually,
I thought were interesting. You know, had some action.
I had you interviewing Joan Jett playing at our community space, and someone walked by and turned it off. So, they'd rather hear silence, so never mind. Guess to each his own, you know? Why am I telling you that?
How did you play that? From audio, or was it...
I played it off a CD. I burned a CD of it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because there's a clip of that on YouTube you can also see.
Oh, yeah, I saw it. I did not see it. I'm lying to you.
Which is interesting because sometimes people will see a two-minute clip and they'll be like, Joan Jett hated Nardwuar or something like that, but actually at the end of the interview she was totally into it.
Yeah.
So it's weird how sometimes people, they assume that. What's neat, though, is, like you're saying about, you know, people being rude or different people's reactions for everything. I posted an interview I did with Kathy Griffin, and there's also an interview I did with Slipknot that's on the internet, and the Kathy Griffin fans hate me as much as the Slipknot fans, which I think is amazing, and I love that, because do you think the Kathy Griffin fans think they have anything in common with the Slipknot fans? No way! And do the Slipknot fans think they have anything in common with the Kathy Griffin fans? No way! So I'm uniting Kathy Griffin and Slipknot! So I think I must be doing something good there.
Speaking of Slipknot, when you talk to these people, and they're in their characters, like when you interviewed Gwar, he was totally in his Gwar character, have people break their characters to talk to you?
I have talked to Dave Brocky as Dave Brocky and his Dave Brocky band, and he's pretty much exactly the same person, actually. He talks exactly like that.
So, P.S., one of those guys from Gwar lives in Fort Worth now.
Really? Which guy?
I don't know.
Executioner?
I don't remember which Gwar guy. I've seen one of his bands, and it was, I think they were called the Hellions.
Interesting.
Yeah. And Henry Rollins thought you were just being a character. And how do you feel when you interview someone and they just, they see you as this, plaid-wearing character? Do you even care?
Well, what was interesting about that interview, Rick, and thanks for thinking about me. Does that hurt your brain to think about me?
No.
And that's a lot of research you've been doing here. Holy
crap.
As a social experiment, playing some Nardwuar to Human Serviette in an open space to see how people will react to it. Turn it off! Turn it off! That's a real hands-on marketing. That's like a real focus group type thing. I'm quite impressed by that.
You're apparently not popular with bad screamo bands. That's what you got from that.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Now, what, regarding Henry Rollins was, when the interview was over, it was do-do-do-do-do-do. As soon as the tape was off, he was like, you need to get fucked. When's the last time you were fucked? So a lot of crazy stuff happened afterwards. I still emailed him for a couple of years after that, hoping to do an interview with him. And this kind of comes all the way back to Penelope Spheris, partly because in a decline of Western civilization, Black Flag is featured, but not Henry Rollins. It features Chavo, Ron Reyes, who lives in Vancouver. And my idea was to do a joint interview with Henry Rollins and Ron, a.k.a. Chavo from Black Flag, when Henry came through town. So I kept on bugging him, saying, we really need to do a joint interview, and we can do this, and just need you for a second. But he just emailed me back over and over, you need to change your act. Goodbye, leave me alone. I kept emailing him, and a couple years later, he emailed and said, Ian MacKay of Fugazi showed me your Iggy Pop interview. Let me listen to your Iggy Pop interview. That was some good shit, but you still need a new shtick, and don't ever bug me again. So I'm just working on it over and over again. Remember, it took me about 15 years with Jell-O, so that I did that interview with Henry, I think it was 98 or 97, so when would that be?
2013?
Yes, okay, unlucky 13.
Five more years.
Maybe I'll get back to you then and let you know. So I have a bit more time, and then after that, ooh.
Get more respect. Where'd you go? You still there?
Yep, still there.
Okay, I got terrified. That's when we disconnected. I'm using this very old phone right now. Woohoo! Okay, you've been interviewing all these people. Have you ever turned down an interview? Because you interviewed just about everybody, I've noticed. Like, yeah, just every terrible... I mean, fans, I think are terrible. I'm sure you don't like every band you interviewed. But yeah, isn't just, like, basically turned down?
I learned this from the Canadian band Sloan, who were signed around the same time Weezer were signed. They had that saying, GGBB, good guys, bad band. So if it's a bad band, I'll still probably interview them because they probably are good guys, GGBB. I have turned down and missed out on different sort of stuff that's happening. I remember Alanis Morissette as a teenager was playing in Vancouver. I don't know, as a teenager or young. And I was like, well, that's...
Can't do that on television.
I don't want to check that out. Yeah, exactly. This is before she even had the hits. It would have been good to talk to her, but you can't do that on television, right?
Yeah.
But I was like, nah, I don't want to do that. That's silly. And there were a few times, actually, that I was able to remedy, like, for instance, Nirvana, when they played with Sonic Youth. I didn't care about either band, really. And then, because I'd already talked to Sonic Youth, and actually, no, I don't know if I had talked to Sonic Youth at that point. No, I had talked to Sonic. I just didn't, I was able to write that wrong, was able to do an interview with him. But I've pretty much, actually, there's stuff I regret every day that I could have done that was interesting. But there's always somebody new to interview, so it's really hard to have any regrets.
Yeah, and when you do interview those people, like, on this, like, because you find out stuff about them before you actually see them, like, when you interviewed, what's that dude's name from Lord of the Rings and The Good Son?
Oh, Elijah Wood?
Yeah, how did you run into him, and how did you know he likes sandwiches, and all this other bits?
Well, he was shooting a movie in Vancouver called Tri-17, and this was just right after he shot Lord of the Rings, which was pretty incredible, and a friend of mine was working on the movie, and they said, well, why don't you just come down to the rap party and talk to Elijah Wood? And I had actually dropped by a tape to Elijah Wood ahead of time, so he actually checked, there might have been a Welcome to My Castle cassette, VHS cassette, at his hotel wherever he was staying in Vancouver. I think he checked under the name, like, Jimmy Smits or something like that. I forget exactly what it was. So he had checked out my tapes at the cast party, just went right up to him and started talking to him, and he was, like, totally into it, which was really great. So he had actually been familiar with a bit of my stuff, and that sometimes helps when at least somebody approaches it with a positive attitude. Sometimes people are tipped off, like, this guy's an asshole, and if they're told that right before the interview, it's going to make them clam up quite a bit. It's pretty hilarious, though. You can't tell, like, a gangster rapper such as Snoop Dogg, oh, watch out for this guy. He's an asshole. He's really tough. He's going to try to trick you. Like, gangster rappers like Snoop or whatever. It's like, come on, bring it on, man. Bring it on. So that's kind of funny.
And Snoop Dogg and Dropkick Murphys and Sonic Youth has stolen things from you, right? But they even, actually, does Snoop Dogg ever get back here the stuff he stole from you?
No, and I'm quite upset about this. He just played in Vancouver 2 weeks ago, and I went down to the gig. They said he would do an interview. I came back later to the gig, and he blew off the interview, even though he said he would actually do the interview. I've tried to interview Snoop 8 times, and I've only got to him 4 times. It's especially disheartening because the last time I talked to him in 2007, he said the next interview we're going to do is at my house, and you can have all your stuff back. Well, here we are in Vancouver. I can't even set an interview up with him. There's been like 3 interviews since then I've tried to do with him, and he's blown me off. He has a Cassius Clay record of mine, Muhammad Ali, and he also has a Whispers record, like a soul R&B band from the 60s at his place, and a Blowfly record too. But I'm happy to report I've been talking to Snoop about Blowfly for years and years and years, and Snoop did steal my Blowfly record that Blowfly finally hooked up with Snoop Dogg. Tom, Uncle Tom, Lo-Fi's manager and drummer, emailed me the other day to say they finally met Snoop Dogg. They went on Snoop's bus and they partied with him for a couple hours. So maybe that signifies the end. Maybe I will not go after Snoop Doggy Dogg anymore because my goal has been achieved. Lo-Fi is running now with Snoop Dogg.
Excellent. So your stuff might just show up at your doorstep one day. Crossing your fingers. Maybe he'll read this and he'll do that.
Well, he said I would have to go to his house to pick it up, but I can't even, like, get an interview with him in Vancouver.
Just drive to his house. Come on, what's that drive? It's nothing.
Well, I was studying his reality show to try to figure out where he was living so I could actually go there. What is neat about this whole thing was the one day when I thought I'd be able to, like, maybe go down to L.A. and meet him, he was busy, ironically enough, doing an interview with Canadian television during the intermission of a hockey game of the Anaheim Mighty Ducks. It was the Anaheim Mighty Ducks hockey team they were playing, and the Canadian sports announcers did an interview with Snoop in the stands. You can actually even watch that on YouTube, and he did a little rap to the announcer, which was pretty amazing. But that's why Snoop was busy that day. He was at a hockey game. It's kind of ironic. The one day when maybe I could make it down there, he's busy at a hockey game.
That's wild. Wild business. I keep playing said that. That's wild. Okay, back to me. Talking to you.
Playing a band at all, Rick?
Not one that tours. I go on tour with bands. I don't really have my
what
own band.
What band did you go on tour with?
I went on tour with a band called Best Friends and a band called Brickfi that you probably never heard of. Best Friends you might have heard of. Possibly.
Sorry?
Say again?
Brickside?
Brickside.
Did you tour up here to Canada or
no,
Seattle or anything?
Nothing like that. They're too little.
Portland?
Portland. Best Friends played in Portland. That's Friends spelled F-W-E-N-D-S.
Yeah, I love that. Best Friends. I love that.
Yeah,
awesome.
Good. They went on tour with Matt and Kim. If that means anything to you.
Yeah, signed to the Fader record label.
Yeah, there you go. They went on tour with them. Yeah, okay, all your information you get before you talk to these people, and amazingly in a very short amount of time, are you willing to mention how that happens?
Oh, well, if I have to do an interview with Matt and Kim or coming to Vancouver possibly, who would I talk to?
You could talk to me.
Yes, exactly. You, Rick. So usually through connections
yeah,
like
that's what
that.
I assume. Here's that DIY punk rock connection. That's
totally.
That's what I gathered.
And that's usually what's the best, right?
Yeah.
Like the and for instance, when I interviewed Glenn Danzig, I was thinking, how can I get some good questions for Glenn Danzig? I talked to Mike Lavella from Gearhead Magazine, and he used to live in Pittsburgh, and he had been a big Misfits fan. In fact, had been over at Glenn's house, and Glenn had offered Misfits t-shirts and stuff, so he had tons of information. And then Mike Lavella said, we should talk to Tim Kerr. Legendary punk rocker. The big boys. So I talked to Tim Kerr.
From Austin.
Yes. And another connection, actually, regarding Texas and all that. When I interviewed Paul Cook of the Sex Pistols, I found out through my friend Grant Lawrence from the rock and roll band The Smugglers, when The Smugglers were on tour, they had met a band called The Sons of Hercules from Texas,
yeah,
whose lead singer, Frank, was in a band called The Vamps, who actually opened up for the Sex Pistols in Texas. So I was able to ask Frank from The Vamps and Sons of Hercules about the Sex Pistols show in America. So yes, totally, just from the indie rock connections that,
beautiful,
that exist.
That's what I hoped and figured. I actually asked somebody who does interviews how they prep for that. They said, just look at the Wikipedia page. And I was like, but you're asking things they already, that people already know about.
Well, Wikipedia is useful because it shows you what not to ask.
Yeah. Oh, good. I should have did that. What is your real name? No, none of that. Way back in the day, when you throw magazines at people, like, where do you get these magazines? Subscribe to all these magazines? Or you just grab whatever you see with a person you might have an interest?
Well, I was mentioning Snoop Dogg. The Whispers record was actually my friend Adam, the beat assassinator from CITR, who was into the Noise Show and doing the Noise Show. So I borrowed his Whispers record to bring to that interview. So it's actually, a lot of the stuff is not mine. That's why it's really painful when Snoop takes it. Lately, I've been buying records myself, so if they get stolen or broken, I don't have to say something was stolen or broken to the person. Because Adam was pissed when that Whispers record was given away.
Was that your Young Men record that was broken?
And the Sonic Youth thing, which is kind of interesting, was I thought they had recorded, this was when I interviewed in 1991, I thought they had recorded a version, that's amazing, you mentioned that again, Rick, yes, of Charlie Brown. And I thought, well, they recorded at Conrad Uno's in Seattle, Charlie Brown. The Northwest had such a great punk scene in the 60s with like the Sonics, the Wailers, the Kings, and all those bands. And there was also a band called the Young Men that did a version of Charlie Brown, but Charlie Browning, about a University of Washington Huskies football player. So I thought if Sonic Youth recorded a version of Charlie Brown, they'd be interested in obscure local reading of that called Charlie Browning. So I brought that record, which my friend Ed, a record collector, who I met at CITR, had given me because he had a double. So I brought it to Sonic Youth. They didn't even listen to me, and they broke the thing. Years later, by fluke, I found another copy of that record at a Bellingham Value Village. Now, the story just keeps going on and on. When I was prepping for my interview with Sonic Youth, which was just canceled a couple weeks ago, which I hope will happen, I ended up contacting Jack Endino, legendary producer, who recorded Nirvana, amongst all the other bands like Murder City Devils and stuff like that. And he said that he actually was at the studio when Sonic Youth were recording the song, supposedly that I thought was Charlie Browning, in Seattle, Washington, with Conrad Uno. So it was Jack and Dino, so they're really nice people, Jack and Dino and Conrad Uno, and it was an Alice Cooper song they recorded, not Charlie Brown. So it's taken me that many years to figure this out.
And you know what?
But I only found that out because I was going to do another interview with Sonic Youth.
Oh.
I could have asked Jack and Dino a couple weeks ago about that. Now, you might also think, there's no lead. The leads just keep coming. You know, there's no end.
You know, completely on the side, I lost all respect to Alice Cooper once he hung up on you. Just saying. I loved Alice Cooper up to that point.
Well, yeah, what's weird about that is afterwards somebody said, Nardwar, you shouldn't have mentioned golf. If you mention golf, he's going to hang up. And I thought to myself, wait a second. Okay, if he doesn't like golf, then I wish somebody had told me. I would have put it as my last question. But nobody told me that he didn't like golf. That's what somebody said, why he actually hung up. Now, this kind of goes back again to the connections. You're talking how I get information. Ronnie from the band The Muffs, who dated Lisa Marr from the rock and roll band Cub from Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada, and also married Lisa Marr for a bit, and she now lives in L.A. and hangs out at the Echo Park Film Center, which No Age hang out at. Again, just keeps going on and on. Ronnie actually had tipped me off. He gave me information on my Gene Simmons interview because he talked to Pat Fear from the band White Flag, who told Ronnie that Gene Simmons has a huge collection of Fresca. Like, he just loves Fresca. And there's tons and tons of Fresca in a giant warehouse. Like, not just one, but tons and tons of Fresca. So I was able to ask that to Gene Simmons. And in a weird sort of twist, Ronnie knows all my interviews because I always bug him asking him stuff. He said that the manager, Toby, of Alice Cooper, that you can hear in that interview when I'm talking to Alice Cooper, at one time approached the Muffs, Ronnie's band, for management, and said, hey, can I manage you? And Ronnie said, hey, you're Toby. I once heard an interview you did with Nardwar, that Alice did with Nardwar. What happened there? And the manager said, I didn't know where that was going. And then that's why apparently they hung up. Maybe it wasn't the golf. They just, quote, didn't know where it was going.
I thought you were a jokester. And what you're not. What else?
I love fun. I am a jokester, and I'm willing to take anything if I can. I'm very serious. Serious and stupid. Like, I don't realize things are in danger. Like, as I was mentioning to you about the band Quiet Riot, the band Skid Row did the same thing. Sebastian Bach, a fellow Canadian, the interview wasn't going too well because I was asking him about bands he didn't like. For instance, I was asking about the band Warrant, and he's like, why are you talking about bands that aren't my own band? Why don't you ask some questions about my band? And then he reached over to my head, grabbed the toque that was on my head, and chucked it across the room, and then said, I'm going to beat you up for fun. Now, after saying that, he said, give me the video camera. And I gave it to him and goes, where's the eject button? And I thought he was just taking out the tape to autograph or something. I was like, oh, the eject button is like right there. He takes it and whips it across the room, and then it breaks the tape from the interview. So I am really seriously stupid for some things. Like, I'm so oblivious to what's going on.
Happens, everyone, you know.
But like, if Skid Row, if a guy's angry, you don't show him where the eject button is on the cassette deck, do you? Or the TV, on the video camera?
I went to a grocery store one time and someone stole my tape out of my video camera because I had no authorization to film inside a Winn-Dixie.
And that's what I learned.
Yeah.
Exactly, Rick. What you have to do is, how did they steal the tape out of your camera?
They didn't steal it. They asked for it. And before they could watch it, I opened the back up and pulled the tape out with my teeth so they couldn't actually watch it.
What I learned to do after the Skid Row incident was, when I say hand over the tape or you want to eject it or whatever, is always bring a fake tape to the interview and have it half the way wound up, you know, with a label on it. Like, for instance, yours would say Safeway supermarket footage.
Yeah.
So if you think you're going to get in trouble, you fumble and then give them the fake tape and then they can destroy it that way. So after the Skid Row incident, I would bring a fake tape with me. So if somebody asked for it, I would give it to them. Never had to. So I stopped bringing the tape, but then 4-5 years after the Skid Row incident, it happened with Quiet Riot, and I didn't have the tape. And then after Quiet Riot, I was like, okay, this is never going to happen again. It happened with Tom Green. So I recommend always bringing a fake tape. It's always important to have
people.
A fake tape. Nowadays, though, my camera that you told me to take photos of myself with, I don't have right in front of me.
Has
like HD video on it.
Yeah.
So if somebody does take my tape, at least now I can film them taking my tape.
Yeah. Love it. Okay. I got any more questions? Okay, what's different about this Razor Cake interview you did opposed to the other ones? Big difference, I've noticed.
What, this is for Razor Cake?
Yeah.
Oh. What's the difference between this?
Now the interview you did with the guy from Rage Machine is different than the other ones because there's a new artist. What happened to Mitch Klim from Texas?
Oh, I thought you meant your interview.
Oh,
I thought you were going to say, like, this is your life.
Guess what? This isn't Razor Cake.
What's the difference between this? Now this isn't Razor Cake.
Daryl closes the room right now. What do you think of that?
The door busts open, and this is your life. Yes, I noticed that, and it was incredible.
No,
I had no control. Well, the thing is, I never knew Mitch Klem when Todd from Razor Cake is a genius. He just assigns people to do stuff, and he assigned Mitch Klem to do some illustrations for me. That's how I met him. I had no idea who he was until I started contributing to Razor Cake. In fact, until he started illustrating me.
Yeah.
I had no idea who he was. He just started illustrating me. I was like, oh my God. And then I was able to use him for gig posters and even to do The Last Evaporator's Andrew W.K. Split 7-inch. He did the artwork for it.
Well, there.
Which somebody said on iTunes, they commented on iTunes, they said, is that a ripoff of a Collective Soul album cover? It's actually a ripoff of an old Guess Who record, but not Collective Soul, but I thought that was quite hilarious.
But yeah, new artist. You caught that, obviously.
Oh, yeah, I love it. It's awesome. That, I think, is kind of the tradition of stuff happening with, as I mentioned, independent DIY media, like CITR Radio. You know, you're doing a show, you never know what's going to happen. You're submitting to a magazine, you never know what's going to happen. It's great. I love it.
It shocked me. I was slightly upset. I was like, did Mitch Klim quit? Are they not friends anymore? I guess you don't really know Mitch Klim that well.
Well, I do know him quite well now because I've got him to do quite a bit of artwork since he started doing stuff for the column. Like, he's done quite a few gig posters. He actually did all the menus and stuff. I don't know if
you saw that,
on the DVD
That's
some
Mitch.
Of that stuff. Like, some of those, and he did illustrations for some of the interviews that are on there, too. So he's totally done quite a bit of stuff.
Another Texas, a big Texas connection right there.
Exactly.
Yeah. It's a huge one. Okay, and, I'm watching all these videos, listening to this
audio. Oh, why Mitch Klem wasn't in there? I did check his blog. I haven't talked to him. And on his blog, it said something like, I've got a new job. Sorry about my blog post or something like that. So maybe he's busy.
Anyway,
I got a new job. I missed my Razor Cake deadline, it said.
Oh, okay. I didn't catch that. We're live journal buddies. I didn't catch that.
Because, do you notice, remember, he does a cartoon too in Razor Cake, right?
Yeah. He does My Stupid
the
Life.
Strip. It's not in there.
Oh, yeah, wasn't he? You're right. He did mention it was... Yeah, okay, I remember that now. Okay,
so,
I just thought there was some kind of Mitch Klem
and that's... Exactly.
Okay, didn't happen. All right, and of all your interviews and what they usually end with the do-do-do-do-do-do thingy, what is the weirdest reaction you've got to that? I mean, the Michael Moore one terrified me. Like, I had to turn on the speakers on my computer from his screaming do-do.
The best one probably was James Brown. Because I went doot doot a loot doo, and he went, I'm not gonna go wop bop a loo bop a dim bam boom. I was like, no, doot doot a loot doo, and the backup singers went doot doo. But I was totally wrong because I was incredible. Like, he totally did it. You know what I mean? Wop bop a loo bop a dim bam boom. Like, what was going on there? It was, oh my God. So he basically did the best one. The worst one of all time, pretty much. And the one that, quote, got me was Rob Zombie. At the end of the interview, I was like, doo-doo-loo-doo, and he just walked away from the speakerphone he was doing the interview from backstage at a giant corn gig. So he walked right out of the room, and I kept going, doo-doo-loo-doo, doo-doo-loo-doo, and seriously, like 20 minutes later, somebody came over and said, what's going on there? I'm like, well, I'm waiting for Rob Zombie to go doo-doo. He's like, he left the room like 20 minutes ago. I'm like, well, can you go doo-doo? He goes, okay, doo-doo, and it ends right there. So that was quite amazing. As much as that was kind of maddening, it was kind of genius of him just to kind of walk away, and I just kept on going and going and going. And you can actually hear that too at nardwar.com.
A 20-minute wait in between that too?
Kind of.
Okay.
Yeah, I might have edited it a bit.
Yeah, it makes sense. Don't worry. Okay, well, I guess I'm basically done, unless anything you'd like to add.
Well, just thanks so much for caring, Rick. I really appreciate the interest in all things Nardwar to Human Serviette, and if people are interested and confused by what I've said, because God knows I am, please check out nardwar.com. Also, you can check out Nardwar on Twitter, and there's also clips on YouTube, but everything is linked from my own website there, and keep on rocking in the free world, and doo 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 doo.